There's that going. So today is October 21st. It's Tuesday. We're at the home of Mary Catherine Hoover here in Williams, Arizona. And we're continuing with oral history recollections of the South Rim of Grand Canyon and Mary's time there. And Mary had just mentioned a friend of hers that she spent a lot of time with. What was her name, Mary?
Constance Keller. K-E-L-L-E-R.
How did you meet her?
Constance was an older lady, and she'd lost her husband. They were living in Albuquerque, and she was from a family in Chicago who had a candy factory, and her parents were gone, and her husband was gone. She had no children, and she had a brother-in-law someplace. I don't know where he was, back east in New York or Maryland or someplace in that area. Anyhow, she was living there in Albuquerque, and she thought, I've got to do something with the rest of my life. And she was getting up into years. I think she was in her 60s when she came. And she saw this ad for curio shop clerks at Fred Harvey Grand Canyon. So she called up, gave the number. It was Joe Ernst was in charge of that. And Joe said, how old are you? How long do you intend to work? All this. And he found her very, a very nice person, which she really was. And she said, well, I can come out. I can get on the train and come out for an interview. So she came, and he interviewed her, and he hired her. Well, she had to go back and close up her apartment and everything, and she did. And she went to work at the Hopi House.
What year was this, Mary?
You know, I'm not really sure anymore.
Roughly? 40s, 50s?
Oh, you know, it was probably the 50s or 50s, probably.
Okay.
It was in the 60s because television had just come in. And I had a television.
64-ish, maybe?
Yeah, maybe 64. Anyhow, she would come to my door. She lived right around the corner from me. She had a little single room. It had been, actually it had been a linen drop from the second floor, and they had closed that off and made it into a bedroom. And they put a little sink in for her and everything so that she had all the conveniences, and she brought her own bed. And I thought that was really different. She was Scotch descendant. She had beautiful Scotch plaid clothing, and she dressed to the... She was every bit a lady. She was a little gray-headed lady when she came. And Joe put her right by the door going out of the Hopi House toward the El Tovar. Well, she got more people walking out with things than anybody they ever had. She was very observant of people, and anyhow, she was Presbyterian, so she didn't go to church at the Canyon, but she had her own way of taking care of church. And she would come to me because she had a lot of beautiful clothes, but they usually had zippers up the back, and she couldn't reach the back to pull the zippers up anymore. So she'd knock on my door and say, would you zip me up?
Uh-huh.
And of course I would. And on the night that Hazel was on TV, she'd come knocking at my door, and she said, I think it's about time to watch Hazel. Can I come in and watch with you? So she'd come in and watch, and then she'd say, well, I gotta go home. And she'd go down the steps and around the corner to her little room, and I loved her for that.
So you mentioned she was positioned by the door in the Hopi House. Would she see people and say, this person really likes that and I should show it to them? Or was she catching shoplifters? Help me out.
Well, like one day this man came in and she was waiting on somebody, and he said, can I see that belt? And she handed him the belt. Well, she finished waiting on this person and she looked up and he was going out the door. And she said, oh, sir, would you like to pay for that belt? He had put it on and was going out the door with it. He was very embarrassed, but he came back and paid for it. But she oftentimes, you know, would see people do things like that.
I see.
And she was, like she, I said, she was very observing. And she was She had a really good sense of humor. One day she came over to my apartment and she said, Mary, what do you say when you get angry? And I said, oh, Muriel, I say numerous things. She said, well, I said a bad word today. She said, I got so angry with somebody, and I just said, oh, damn it. I never curse. I said, you're just a human being. We all do those things. Don't worry about it, because she had that so in her mind that she'd curse somebody. She didn't say, damn you. She just said, damn it. But
do you know how they made her so mad?
Huh?
Do you know how they had made her so mad? What was the incident?
I have no idea, but she was really angry at somebody over there. And it could have been anything. It could have been somebody going out the door, for all I know. But she had this one little curios cabinet that she showed people things out of. And some of them were very expensive. But she also had sight of the rugs and some of the real expensive things on the other side, because the Hopi house has a lot of bric-a-brac around and everything, but there are spaces where you can see through. And she oftentimes saw people pick up things. They were looking at things and they just pick up something and stick it in their pocket. And she always caught people. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she got older and she finally decided that she had to retire. And so she found a home in Phoenix, and it was on a dead-end street. I can't remember the street, but it's called Presbyterian Manor, I think. Anyhow, she went there to live. Well, she always told me that she'd never have a TV, and she'd never had a kitchen or a refrigerator, because she didn't like to cook, and this place fed her well, and if she couldn't get up to the dining room or didn't feel like going up for breakfast, they would bring it to her little apartment. She had taken her bed with her when she moved down there, and that always impressed me, because I didn't know anybody that moved a bed around. But anyway, she went down there, and she was living there. She got to be good friends with Barry Goldwater. And one day he was out at this home, and he was giving a speech to the people there. It was election time or something, and it was a political speech. And he walked in, and who did he see? Across the room was Constance, and he went right to her, gave her a big hug, and said, oh, Constance, if I had known you were down here, I would have been here to see you much sooner.
Oh.
And everybody was saying, how do you know him? She waited on him. Actually, Mr. Goldwater had probably all the jewelry he ever wanted, but he would buy gifts for people, and he'd always take Constance's word that it was good. So that was something nice.
At the Hopi House.
At the Hopi House, yeah. Mm. So anyhow, we went down to see her one day, my friend Myra and I, and she said, oh, I have something to show you. She had this great big screen TV right at the end of her bed. She said, I watch Johnny Carson every night, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Oh.
And I was amazed at that. But anyway, she enjoyed her TV, and then she says, I have something else to show you. She had gotten a little refrigerator. And she opened it up. Guess what was inside? Strange. A box of chocolates. She still loved her chocolates. And a jar or a pitcher of water.
Huh.
That's all she had in it.
Okay.
But anyhow, we went. That was the last time we saw her. We went there and she invited us up for lunch in the dining room that day. And I put my purse on the table, and she said, Mary, we don't put our purses on the table.
Oh my.
She just leaned over and told me that she didn't want me to be embarrassed to have somebody walk up and say, you know, we don't put our, you know. So she kind of whispered it to me so I wouldn't be embarrassed.
Oh,
I thought that
nice.
Was funny. I never hardly ever carry a purse even, but that day I did. Anyhow, we had a nice lunch together, and she walked out with us, and it was a dead-end street. And here she was at the end of the street, And we could see her for about, we'd gone about 3 or 4 blocks, and she was still out there waving to us. And that was the last time we saw her. But I really loved that little lady. And like I say, she had the most, she was a Murray. And she had the Murray clan, all the scars and the...
The crest?
Crest and the suits and everything made out of Murray clan.
Wow.
Material. It was real wool. It was, she had some beautiful things. But anyway, I have a... It's a set for perfume and powder, and it's glass. And she gave me that. I have never used it, but I have it. It sits on my dresser. But anyway, I thought that was really something for her to give me that, because it was from her family.
Nice.
But it doesn't have any initials on it or anything like some of them do. But anyway, I thought that was really something for her to give me that.
You don't have a TV, do you, Mary?
Yeah, I do.
You do. Okay. What are your thoughts about the television?
The television came in 1962.
Okay.
And
was it a good thing? Was it a bad thing? Looking back now, what were you doing before the television and then after the television?
We couldn't get radio reception. It was so much interference, I guess, because of the minerals and the rocks and stuff. And you couldn't get radio reception at all up there. I had a Victrola. And it had a radio on it, but I never listened to the radio until later. And then I don't know how they did it. Maybe it was with the antennas and stuff. But we were able to get radio after quite a while. And then I got a TV. Couldn't stand it till I got one. Had one station, and we had two stations. And gee, we were in heaven when we got five. But... we did have TV, and there was it was beamed in from Bill Williams Mountain to the Fire Watch Tower at Hopi Point. So that was our big stir that year. The men in the village got together with a man named White, who had an electrical place down here, and he was very interested in TV, and he helped him get it set up. They called him Whitey, but his last name was White. And he came up and worked with them and got it all set up, which was really great.
Nice.
And eventually Fred Harvey had all these rooms had TV in them. They didn't put it in the old Motor Lodge, but they did when they changed over and made the new buildings at the for the Maswick Lodge.
Why do you think Constance didn't want a television?
Well, you know, she had certain things she did. And I think she read her prayers in the evening, and she read magazines, and she liked to look at fashion magazines and stuff. And I imagine that she kept herself busy. She had a nephew. Actually, I think her nephew took care of her burial. He was a doctor, and I think he was in New York. And thinking back, I told you that her brother-in-law was in New York or Maryland, but it was her nephew, and her brother-in-law lived in Colorado someplace. I met him one time, but I never met her nephew. He did come out, and when she died, I guess he came out and took care of her funeral and everything. And I imagine that he was her heir, because she didn't have any children. And that was the only family she had, was a brother-in-law and this nephew and his family. So anyway, she was one of the... She never said unkind things. She would maybe dislike somebody, but she said, "I don't talk about them." And you knew that she didn't like them. Otherwise, she would have said something. Because if she liked somebody, she'd say, "Oh, that person is so nice," you know.
Nice.
But she was every bit a lady. We had lots of ladies that worked at Grand Canyon, and we had some that weren't very nice ladies. But anyway, she was every bit a lady.
So, Mary, would you be willing to speak some about the social scene at Grand Canyon, and specifically, you know, you never married. Sort of, how did that all social scene work out for you? And you may not want to talk about this, but if you do.
Oh, I kept myself busy. It didn't make any difference. I had lots of nieces and nephews. When they had children, I used to make them baby quilts and all that kind of stuff. I must have made 100 baby quilts over my lifetime. And just right now, I've got 5 new great nieces and nephews. Mm-hmm. And one of them is...
But you're a very attractive woman. I can't imagine that a man would
I had a bad experience, and I just... After that, I just didn't want to have anything to do with getting married. I worked hard. I went home. If I had enough ambition to do something, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I have made 3 very intricate bedspreads, which I gave away. Then I've made quilts, and big quilts for my own bed, and I made my brother and sister-in-law the most beautiful quilt. On the funny part was, I bought them in the late 40s, early 50s. I found a catalog that was really good, and I still get it. It's Hirschner's, and they sell all kind of crochet stuff and embroidery stuff and quilts and stuff. And I had a little extra money this one time, and I thought, I was looking at this catalog, and they had applique quilts. Well, I bought 3 of them. One was a daisy, and one was like a morning glory, and the other one was poppies, and poppies are my favorite flowers. And I did the first 2 because they looked, I did the easy one, which was the daisy one, and then I did the other one, and then I kept the poppy one. I cut it all out and everything and put it away. And my brother and sister-in-law were having their 60th anniversary, and I thought, oh, what can I give them? And she just loves handwork. So I had cut that all out. In all those years, I had never made it. So when they were going to have their anniversary, I got it out, and I did it. And we had a minister here at the Methodist Church. His name was Johnson. Anyhow, he quilted, and he did a beautiful job.
Wow!
And I had him quilt it, and then I made a donation to the church for him, and I sent it to my brother and sister-in-law, and she was delighted. In fact, I have pictures of that quilt. I have pictures of a lot of things I made. But anyway,
did your mom do needlework?
She used to. We used to have a quilting frame in our living room. We never used the living room hardly unless somebody came to visit. And when her quilting people came in, she had friends that came, and they would quilt a quilt. And sometimes they'd raffle it off at Thanksgiving time to earn money for the church for Christmas.
Okay.
And the Catholic Church does a lot of things that people don't realize that they do.
Sure.
And they use money like that for holidays and stuff so that everybody would have a Christmas. And that was a good thing. And my mother just always let the quilting frame up. So I was always where there was quilting being done from, you know, growing up. And my sister loved to quilt.
Okay.
She made her grandkids. In fact, she made 10 quilts, baby quilts, before she died so that the next bunch of grandkids could have one from grandma.
Wow.
And, of course, they're not just grandkids anymore. She's got, I think, 5 families that are 5 generations.
Is that right?
With my brother and I being the highest of the generation. And,
wow.
One of the kids is going to have twins in November or December. And we just had a new little baby, a new little baby boy. That's the 5th one. That's the 5th generation one. I don't know. We have a bunch of them. In the family. Even my brother has a 5th generation under him. His oldest daughter's great, great, whatever it is, grandchild is the fifth generation. So that's really something. He's a little boy.
Nice.
And he came early, but he's doing great. And so I think that's wonderful. But yeah. I'm just not up to doing quilts anymore.
Understood.
I've got two all cut out ready.
Oh, my gosh.
Make, and I just put it off. One of them can be done completely on the sewing machine. It's a lion, which would really be nice for that little boy to play on. But I just haven't had the time or the energy or the effort to put in, so I haven't made it. But I do love to make quilts. But I need to, since I've lost so much weight, I need to do some alterations for Mary before I do any other sewing. And I can't sew very long at a time. I really get nervous sewing, considering that I sewed all of my life. It makes me very nervous now to sew, so I don't do very much of it.
Mary, what are your thoughts about technology? I'm thinking you came to Grand Canyon in the mid-1940s, and the telephone was different, and there was no TV, and the radio is different, and today we've all got these little phones.
That's my neighbor. I think she's got a check for me.
Should I go?
Yeah. Just take it for her, if it is. You can tell her to come in if she wants to.
Hello there. My name's Tom. Hello there. Come in, please. Mary says, tell her to come in.
Where's Mary?
She's right there.
Thanks.
I'm sitting right here.
Hi.
Hello.
Finally, Mary.
I'm glad because I haven't gone to the bank because I've been waiting for you.
Huh?
I've been waiting for you, so I haven't gone to the bank.
I know, but this is just to let you know. Hi. Chris.
My name's Tom. Nice to meet you.
This is my neighbor.
How are you? Glad to meet you.
I'm her good neighbor.
Yes.
She does a lot of things I used to do and can't do anymore.
I just had to say that. I'm just being funny.
Nice.
It's dated for tomorrow on the 22nd. Are you going to the bank today?
I probably won't make it today.
It's dated. That check is dated for tomorrow.
Okay.
So if you went to the bank today, they wouldn't accept it.
Okay, I'll wait till tomorrow.
Just to let you know.
That's fine.
Yeah. I don't get paid till tomorrow, so.
That's fine.
I know. I'm sorry. You know, usually I'm a little bit better than that.
Well, we all have things. We all have things we have to take care of.
Yeah, and especially with the windows being put in, and that's a done job now.
Yeah.
No more, you know, it's done. That was expensive. Very. I have four, and it's pretty expensive.
We're doing an interview.
Okay.
So.
See ya.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay.
Pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Besides everything else, I used to keep busy doing like books for the Auxiliary and the Legion. I did the Legion's books for over 50 years, and the first part of it I did by hand. And when we came down here, they got me a computer, and I had to learn a computer when I was in my 60s, which was kind of hard for this old lady, but anyway, I still use it. But I'm not very good at it, but I do it. And I still keep the books for the condo here, too. So I always had books to do, and I did the laundry books for years. And if I couldn't get them done during the day, I'd take stuff home and work on it at night, or sometimes I'd go back down to the office at night and work on it. But anyway, that way I got to meet all the night watchmen, because we used to not have policemen. It started out with Santa Fe special officers and rangers. Well, the Santa Fe special officers could carry guns. Well, then the Santa Fe went out, and so they hired night watchmen, and they came through, and they put in clocks, and they had to clock in at this and that, whatever buildings they were going through, they had clocks. And so that was a change for all of us. And of course, we still had the rangers, and I never really had any problems with the rangers, excepting once I parked in a fire lane because I couldn't find a place to park, and I had to take some stuff to the office, and there was no place to stop. So I just parked in the middle of the fire lane, ran in and put it on the desk. I came out, and here was a young girl ranger writing me out a ticket. And the judge didn't come up for tickets, so they had one of the rangers took care of things like that. And I think he was the chief ranger, I'm not sure. But anyway, I had to go over to at that time, Steve was already the commissioner, and Steve Verkamp. And I had to go over to his office, and the ranger was there, and he said, "Well, Mary, it's like this. I'm not going to put this on your record or anything, and I'm not going to charge you any fine, but I want you to donate $25 to such and such." So I said, okay, and I wrote out a check for $25, and that was taken care of, and I didn't have that on my records that I had parked in the fire lane.
Oh, my gosh.
But that was the only time I had any problems with the rangers.
But so I'm still thinking about technology and just the changes
the technology
that you've seen.
Was such a change to have. Well, you know, we had to make our own entertainment before then. People would go on hikes, of course. The canyon is famous for its hiking, and sometimes there would be something new come in. We did have a once a week movie, and it was on Saturday night, and then they had to get ready. It was okay because they had all the chairs set up for the movie, and then they'd have mass and religious service for the, if it was Methodist or Baptist, whoever they were having at the, for the ministry in the park. They would come in after the mass was always at 8 o'clock in the morning, so by 10 o'clock the priest was out of there and the other minister could come in and do his services. And I taught Sunday school. My friend Meyer taught Sunday school. When Meyer was sick, I could go from my Sunday school over to her Sunday school and teach her kids. And this one lady was really adamant that I was teaching a Protestant Sunday school when I was a Catholic. I said, "Well, I teach my own, and they're just little kids."
That's right.
"I'm just teaching them things from the Bible or read them a story, and they have their own little book that you read out of." And I said, "That's all I do. Maybe I teach them a little prayer or something, but I said, I teach my religious class on out of our book." Well, she said, "Well, I'm going to take over the Sunday school," and she did. And, of course, I was relieved of my job of doing Sunday school. But that was all right, because Peggy Verkamp and Mary Jane Daisy and I did Sunday school for years together, and I enjoyed doing it. And I got to know the little kids that way, and otherwise, unless they were friends of my friends, kids, why, I never knew them.
Who was Mary Jane Daisy?
Her husband was one of the rangers.
Okay.
His name was Dean. And Mary Jane was a Williams girl, and Dean was a little man. He was a ranger for a long time, and I don't think he had a college education. At one time, there were three men that were rangers who didn't have college educations. One was Dean Daisy. One was, what was Dolly Gibbs's dad's name? Here I go again. Anyhow, him, and then there was a man in some island off of the East Coast where they had a park. Those three did not have college educations, but they were very knowing about everything to do with their area. Bert Luzon was the other one. He didn't have a college education, but he was very smart, and the Indians loved him, and he was one of the few men that went to secret ceremonies of the supais and stuff. He was always there because they invited him.
Wow.
He was their brother. And he did treat them very well, and they loved that old man. Of course, things are different now, and he was very good to them. He would let his back door open to his kitchen, and they had a long table, and the Indians would come in on their way back down to Hilltop, and they sit around the table and put their heads down on the table and sleep. And I think I told you about his daughter-in-law coming down the steps and getting scared to death. But he was always good to all of them. If he was coming in and he saw one walking, he'd offer him a ride. sometimes that was good, and sometimes it was a mistake. I remember making a mistake giving somebody a ride from the store out to Supa Camp. He was drinking, and he had a bottle. And he sat in the back seat, and I was by myself, and I knew him and everything, but I was taking him out there, and I kind of turned my head, and he had the cap off the bottle, and he was drinking from it, and he spilled it all over my back seat.
Oh.
Do you know how hard it is to get hard liquor whiskey out of the smell
no.
out of the car? But anyhow, I liked that old man. I really did. He was a very strong man. His name was Philip. And Philip worked on the putting the lines down into the canyon, the pipelines and stuff of the water and stuff. And he was so strong, they'd have two or three carrying one pipe or two pipes, and they carried them on their shoulders. Mm. Well, he would carry one all by himself.
Wow.
And go down the canyon. That's how they took him down. Mm. That was before they really used helicopters and stuff. And he was just, he always talked to me, no matter where I saw him. At one time, he was a cook at the Bright Angel when I was working down there. And that was in the early, or in the mid to late 40s. I was there in 46 and 47. Anyway, he loved pinions, and he would make a stew. And for the help, he'd put pinions in the stew.
Hmm.
It was really good. And he'd use any kind of meat, and he'd make the best stew.
Nice.
But anyway, he was always a friend, but I never did offer him a ride after that. I thought, no, I'm not going to go through that again. But I knew he had to walk, and it was a long way out there. But anyway, he finally passed away, and I think he was buried at, what is that, Drift Fence.
Mm-hmm.
Where they bury so many of their people. And I was surprised that they didn't bury Harriet Sinella out there or her boy, Lauren, but they're buried in the cemetery.
Mm.
And I think maybe her sister had something to do with that because her sister always lived in town. She lived in Parker. And she was very well, Harriet was very well educated. A lot of it was self-education, but she was very well educated. But her sister was very well educated. And
you had mentioned some of the graves at the cemetery didn't have headstones. And I wondered, was that not so much out of family neglect, but more so out of cost for what a headstone would cost?
It could very well be cost because some of the people were poor and couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Buford and Myra had theirs made before they died. I have my burial all taken care of, and I'm going to be buried. My ashes are going to be buried. And I have a creche in a mausoleum in Kansas City, right across the road from where my mother and dad are actually buried.
Nice.
And that's where I'm going to be.
So what, do you remember what a typical headstone would cost? Not something fancy, but just something average even.
I think around anywhere from $800 to $1,000.
And in the 50s, are you thinking like 1950s costs or today's costs?
No, I don't know how much they cost back then, although one of my brothers worked in a place that made headstones. Hmm. But he died in, what, 48? And so that was a long time ago, and I have no idea how much they charge for them.
I mean, that's a fair amount of money.
My mother and dad had left when my father died. My mother got a headstone, and she had her name put on it, too, reluctantly, because she said she wasn't going to die for a long time, and she didn't want us to waste money. And my brother and I went up and bought the grave for Dad and her, and we went home, and we told her what the paperwork was. My brother paid for one, and I paid for one, and we had all the paperwork there, and we gave it to her, and she said, well, I'm not going to die for a long time. You just wasted your money.
Oh.
She was very thrifty, my mother was. We would never have made it through some of the years that we did if it hadn't been for my mother being very
thrifty.
But she had already got the headstone because when my dad died, she did it. I don't know how she did it because they were living on Social Security and very little income that they had. And I was really surprised, but she must have put money away. Mm-hmm. She was one of these little ladies. She'd go to the bank, and she'd figure out how much groceries she was going to spend, and then she put the rest of the money in savings.
Yes.
And she wouldn't go into savings unless she just had to. Hmm. So I don't know how she did it, but she saved money, considering that they were completely broke when we moved to Kansas City. Hmm. We had enough money for the rent. She couldn't have the electricity turned on the first month because it cost $6 for the hookup at that time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was a different era.
Mm-hmm.
And our thing was Dad would give us, that was when we were little kids. One brother was in the fifth grade, and I was in the third, and my youngest one was in the first grade. And we went exploring every Saturday, or else we had a choice. If the weather was bad or something, kids could get in the afternoon show for a nickel. And then we had another nickel left over because my dad would give us each a dime.
Wow.
And we'd go get it was a half pint of ice cream. It was a little box.
Mm.
And, it was good ice cream.
Mm.
Anyhow, it was right across the street from the theater. So that's what we'd do on bad days.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we'd get on the bus, and kids could ride for a nickel. And you could ride as far in one direction as you could. So we'd go as far as we could on this route. And the next time we go on another route, and we explored all of Kansas City.
Interesting.
We went to Swope Park, we went here, we went there, we went on streets that we shouldn't have been on. We got on they used to have streetcars in Kansas City, and we got on a streetcar and it said 16th and Genesee, I think it was. And this man that was running the streetcar said, "You kids don't want to go on this one." "Oh yeah, we want to see everything." And so we got on it, and we got down there, and we were the conductor, and we were the only white faces.
Mm-hmm.
My brother's older brother said, "We better get back on." We had never been where there, not that we're adverse to having colored neighbors or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who are black, and I enjoy them. But at that time, we had never been out of our little hometown where they had 200, maybe 300 people that were all related to my mother. And we were so scared. But we had seen them on the train. When it went through, we used to go down and watch the train sometimes. It went through my hometown. It was the Katy line, MKTY, down into Texas, I think. Anyhow, it went to Kansas City, and then it went down south. Anyhow, my father used to, when he got a job in Kansas City, he used to ride that train. We always go down and watch the train stop so we could see our dad get off of the train. And my older brother would sometimes come and carry Dad's suitcase. And he worked in the city for a year, and he moved us up there, and we stayed for 9 months. School started the day that we got there, and we left the day it closed for the summer. And Dad didn't like the job he had, and he wasn't getting along well, and the guy wasn't paying him right. His checks would bounce and one thing and another. And that man later became a millionaire during the Second World War because he made parts for airplanes or something.
Hmm.
But anyhow, Dad worked there. He was a welder, and he made ornamental iron tables and steps, and he made a circular staircase for this man one time. And it was in a mansion in Kansas City, Missouri. But we had just never seen a colored person. And when I was little, we had a neighbor that had a restaurant. And one day he came over, he was crippled. And he said, "I've got a crew coming in, and they gave me a contract to feed them for 3 weeks. Can Mary come up and set the table for me? Because it's hard for me to get around and put the dishes on the table and stuff."
Mm-hmm.
And so Mama said, "Oh yeah, she could do that." and she showed me how to set the table and what I should do and everything. Well, there was one very big black man. I was scared to death of him. He was probably the nicest person in the world.
Oh.
But I was at all the food on the other end of the table.
How old were you?
I was 6.
Oh, my.
I was in the first grade that year. And so anyhow, I served them. But all I had to do was take the make sure the plates and the silverware all around, and then take the food out. And then when they were finished eating, I would take dishes back into the kitchen for him so he could take care of them. But I didn't have to wash dishes or anything. All I had to do was serve him. And he gave me some very hard candy for my pay. And my mother would throw it away.
Oh.
Oh, that poor little man. His name was Mr. Rice, Charlie Rice. He was a nice man, but he didn't have any money, and he had his sister living with him, and they finally, I don't know where they went, but they left. Mm. He just wasn't making it. In my hometown, everybody cooked at home.
Yeah.
Nobody went out to eat.
Yeah.
And that was really different when they did. And usually if they went out to eat, it was to some church doings.
Mm.
Because that restaurant was the only one in town, and when it closed, nobody else opened one up.
It's a lot different than it is today.
Oh, yes. It was an old country town.
Hmm.
We had a movie there once a week in the summertime. If the weather was bad, the guy that had a garage across from the park would clean out his garage, and they'd set the chairs up in the garage, and we'd watch it in the garage. But otherwise, it was a tent with no top on it.
Hmm.
And they'd set out, they'd come with this big truck, and they'd set out all the chairs and put up the everything for the movie and get it all set up, and it was a dime. And I stayed with my sister that one summer, and she'd put she had my nephew and my oldest niece and nephew had been born, and she'd put them in the wagon in their pajamas. And we'd pull the wagon up to the show. She would pull it.
Hmm.
And I would walk beside her, and we'd go up to the show. And, of course, they didn't charge for the little kids. They slept through the whole thing most times. And anyway, we'd sit there and watch on these fold-up chairs, watch the movie. We thought it was great. My sister would always take me along. And
what kind of movies were you watching? What sort of?
They were just regular movies, but they were black and white
at that
time. And we thought it was wonderful. You know, it was so different. And anyway, that was one of the places that I went to the movies. And then we went to they had the Tivoli Theater, and then they had the Ashland Theater. And we usually went to the Ashland, but sometimes it had a movie that we'd already seen, so we'd go to the other one. But we had to walk further. And we couldn't take the streetcar or the bus, because either you went to the show or you rode. So
and
we
you couldn't pay for both.
We couldn't pay for both.
Mm-hmm.
My dad made $12.50 a week. Rent was $20 a month. So you can imagine how you had to save. My mother cooked on a kerosene stove in that first house. Because we couldn't afford to have the gas hooked up. So, but she had an old kerosene stove she used in the summertime when we lived in my hometown.
Hmm.
And they took it with them. And so she had that to cook on. And a gallon of kerosene was just 10 or 15 cents at the most. It was probably 10 cents. Everything seemed to be 10 cents around that time. But my dad would walk to work, and he had quite a ways. Once in a while, he didn't feel very good. He'd drive, but very seldom.
Mm.
Sometimes the police would come along, and they got so used to seeing him that they'd pick him up and bring him home.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was, because they didn't ordinarily do those kind of things. But they'd see him, and he was getting older, you know. And it was a good thing, because he did have heart trouble, and so it was a good thing that they did that for him. But he just didn't feel that he could buy the gas to go. And gas was like 15 cents a gallon at the very most. And my brother ran a service station, one of them. And when he went into service in 1941, he closed up the service station and he was getting 15 cents a gallon. And it was up on the corner. It was almost a block from where we lived. And so he didn't have to ride any place to get to work or anything. And he told Mom, I'm going to go sign up. And then they took him, but they didn't put him right in. They took him to, I don't know where they took him, someplace. But he on his papers, they didn't sign him up for to actually enter into service until it was right at Christmas time, I think. Hmm. Maybe the week before Christmas. But he went in the day after Pearl Harbor. He went up and signed up. Mm-hmm. But they took him away, and I don't know if they took him to Leavenworth, or I just don't know where they took him. Because I wasn't very old at that time, and I just don't remember that. Mm-hmm. But I remember the day that Pearl Harbor happened. It was like everything was turned off. I had to go up and get a loaf of bread. The clerk and I were the only one in the store. There was nobody around the street. The streetcar wasn't running. Nothing seemed to be running. It was just so dead stop. Hmm. And I went back home, and my mother, she kind of cried about it, because she said, now all our young boys that go off to war. She had brothers in service. And they came home. But there were some cousins that were killed in service, and that was in the First World War. And my dad was in service, but he was in service before the First World War. He was in from 1909 to 1912, and that's how he got to Kansas. He went to, was in New York, some fort something in New York, and signed up for the Army, and they sent him to Fort Raleigh, Kansas, and he was in the 6th Cavalry, Company C, Company D, 6th Cavalry, at Fort Raleigh, and that's how he met my mother, because I had two older uncles who lived near Ottawa, and my mother was working for her aunt at Ottawa in a boarding house. She rented rooms and she fed her roomers, and my mother was there helping her. And for some reason, Dad's letter didn't get to my uncles on time, and they didn't come in the day he got there like he thought they would. Well, he just came from Fort Raleigh, and it's not that far, but he didn't know where they lived, and so he thought he'd better find a place to stay until they came to town. So he got a room in this boarding house, and he thought, well, if they don't come, I'll just stay here for my week. He was off of duty for a week. And so he stayed there, and he met my mother, because she served the meals.
Nice.
And that's how they came to know one another. And eventually they got married. And had 7 kids, mm-hmm. raised them all. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of grandkids, a lot of great-grandkids, and a lot of great-great-grandkids.
Yeah.
We're a large family.
Yeah.
But
What else do you think about when you look back, think about Grand Canyon, think about your life, that you think is important to capture here on this machine, to speak to future generations about your life?
Well, I met this young man, and I was very close to my mother and dad, and every year I tried to go home to see them. Well, I had made plans to go home, and then we became engaged. Well, we had some religion discussion, and he insisted he wanted to be married in his church, which he never attended, and I insisted I wanted to be married in my church.
What did he do?
Well, I went home to see my parents.
What did he do? What was his job?
And while I was gone, he was a driver for the company.
Okay.
He was in transportation. Anyway, I went home, and while I gave him my mother and dad's telephone number, but he never called. And we had some other difficulties, but anyway, I was kind of upset with him, and he was upset with me, I guess, because I didn't know he had been seeing another girl. And they went to Las Vegas and got married the day after I left to go home to my folks. Hmm. He was so mad at me. And it didn't last, and I felt sorry for her because she's a good girl and a good person. She had a son by him, and he left before the son was born.
Wow.
Which I thought was really, as well as they should have known one another, that was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
well, lucky it didn't happen to you. I mean, what do you?
I just said to hell with it. I threw the ring at him and said, he came to talk to me, and I said, I don't even want to talk to you. Here's your ring. Mm. And I threw it at him and slammed the door in his face. And that was it.
Good for you.
And I never trusted anybody for a long, long time. Mm. I just decided that wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. I'd help my family and be good to them. And mm-hmm. I had 20 nieces and nephews, so there was a big family.
You kept busy.
And I like to do things for my folks, and I could do them as a single person, but when you're married, you have to do, you know, things for your own husband and wife things. And so I just decided that was it. I'm not going to get married. And I just gave up on it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I had a sister that was married 67 years. And for the last 11 years, she took care of her husband who had a stroke. And, you know, that was a big chore.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't leave him for more than an hour unless one of the kids stayed with him. And she really took good care of him. He had to be fed. He couldn't walk. He had to be changed. And she had to clothe him and everything every day. And it was really hard. But she was a nurse. She had done nursing. So she knew how to take care of him, and she did. She'd read to him. She'd sit by his bed and read the newspaper to him every day. She'd call up the weather and see what the weather was going to be and tell him what the weather was going to be every day. If one of the kids was going to come, she'd say, I'm going to fix some lunch now because so-and-so is coming and I have to make more than the usual. And he couldn't talk or anything. And he'd grunt. She knew exactly what he wanted. I don't know how she did that.
Wow.
But I was there one day and I thought, what is he trying to say? And she says, okay, I'll get it for you. And he just smiled. It was fine. That's what he wanted. And I don't see how she did it, but she did it. He was a big man, not fat, big boned man. He had been a wrestler when he was a young man, and that's when she met him, when he was wrestling. His brother was the superintendent of the school there at home, but I don't think he was at that time. I think there was another man at the time my sister was in school. But anyway, she went to the Catholic school, and that was the public school.
It's interesting because it seems like the pool of available men at the Grand Canyon, the selection is kind of...
Well, you know, nothing is permanent at Grand Canyon. It's very unusual for people to come and stay. There were certain jobs that people stayed at for years and years, like me and the Belgars and the Nelsons and the Innises and, you know, those people. But they were the ones who came there with fairly good jobs, and they could make a living. And it was satisfactory, and they loved the scenery, and they loved the area, and it was good for them. But there were other people that came. I had people that came in and walked out before the end of the day. Oh, I hate it here.
The first day?
Yeah, the first day.
Wow.
And I had people from all over the world that worked with me. I had kids from Finland and all different European countries, France and Germany. I had kids from Australia, I had kids from South America, just all over.
Now, some of that was on the temporary work visa, wasn't it?
Some of it was.
Right?
They were work exchange. Mm-hmm. Somebody from the United States would go to their country and work. I had this really funny little French boy. He'd been all over the world. He had a car of his own. So when they got to New York, they flew over from Europe. And there were several of them. And I got the smart one in the bunch. No, they were all smart, but this one was, he was really exceptional. Hmm. And they came over on a plane, and they got off in New York, and they were supposed to fly to Los Angeles and then come to Grand Canyon. Well, he said, let's take a few extra days. I think there were five or six of them in that bunch. He said, let's take a few extra days and drive, and we won't see anything if we fly. So he talked them into it, and they came to Grand Canyon. And the first day, he said, I've got to have a day off. And he said, I only got one day to take care of something. I said, well, you just started to work. He said, I'll be back the next day. He said, I've just got to return this car. They had a stretch limousine that they had driven across the country. They cashed their plane tickets in, got a stretch limousine. They had money over. They ate. They looked around. They got to see the country a little bit. And he got to go to Los Angeles.
Where did he have to return the car? To Los Angeles?
Los Angeles, yeah.
So he drove Los Angeles and took the train back?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he came back, and he was there. And he was a funny kid.
Mm-hmm.
He said he went to he was German. That one was German. He went to France, and they told him not to leave his car in a dark place, to put it under a light so nobody would strip it. Well, he goes down the next morning and his car was stripped. And they laughed and they said, well, you made it easy for him. You lit it up so they could find everything they wanted. Because he parked under the light. But these other guys told him to park under the light so it'd be safe. But he came to my Christmas party. I used to have a Christmas party for the help network with me. And Fred Harvest used to give us a turkey. What would one old lady do with a turkey? So I decided I would have a Christmas Eve party for all the help that worked for me. And I would put the turkey on in the morning, run home during my noon hour and check it, and it got done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I'd get everything done. But he came to the party, and he was going to leave right after New Year's.
Mm.
And he said, Mary, it was a good thing that you had this dinner for us. He said, you know what I would have done? I would have got drunk, and you would have had to fire me. I thought that was such a thing to say. You know, he was just a young kid. He was probably 20 years old.
Mm.
But he said, well, he'd just get drunk and get fired.
What year was that?
That was, I was out, it was after 78. Because I was working in housekeeping at that time. I can't remember exactly. I was working at Yavapai, and I worked at Yavapai from 78, 85. It had to be around 85.
Okay. Did you keep in touch with him? Did he go back to Germany?
No, he went back to Germany. Mm-hmm. And I got a little note from him saying, I sure enjoyed my time at the canyon or something to that effect.
That's nice.
And, but anyway, he could speak English very well.
Hmm.
He was very well educated. And I don't know, we just had kids from all over. The kids from Finland, some of them integrated into the scenery and never went back. We had a boy from Yugoslavia that married a girl from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
She was older than he was. It was a convenience marriage so that he could stay in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They lived together for, I think, a year, and then she divorced him. And she went into nursing after that. I don't know. She was down in Cottonwood for a while, but I have no idea where she is anymore.
Mm.
And I never knew where he went.
Mm.
But he only had one more year to go to be a doctor. And he said, here I am making beds. I said, well, you know, it doesn't hurt a doctor to know how to make a bed.
That's right. That's right.
I thought that was funny.
Mm.
We had quite a bunch of people come through over the years.
How long was the average employee working for you at the laundry?
We had Indian kids that worked at the laundry. Like Ransby was there all the time I was there. And when it closed, I think he went back to the reservation. He took his family out there. But there was girls that worked there for years. Like Harriet worked there for off and on for years. Sometimes she'd take off in the winter months because she had to walk in and stuff. And it was getting kind of hard for her to walk in from the village. But we had like Big Jake worked for us for quite some time, and then he went into bus driving. The first time I saw him, he was driving a truck, a delivery truck. He delivered the garbage to the garbage dumps. He delivered the food to the Altivar and to the Bright Angel and to the cafeteria, back and forth. And there was a guy named Kenny that was working with him when I first met him, and he came to work at the laundry, and they stayed for about a year. The Smiths were there for maybe 3-4 years. They were from Chicago, and both of them worked at the laundry. And let's see, we had two ladies that came from Hollywood. One of them had been a housekeeper for Bing Crosby. And the other one worked in an office, and they were good friends, and they came and they worked two years, and they went back to California. Then we had a lady named Marjorie who came from a ranch out here by Flagstaff. Her husband had bought this ranch, and then he died, and she had to go to work. And she took me to her place one time. It was on a very dirt road. The first time I ever saw an elk.
Wow.
Out in the yard. I said, what is that animal that's out in the yard? And she said, Mary, that's an elk. Haven't you ever seen an elk? I said, no.
Oh my.
That was the first time I'd seen an elk. She was my roommate one time for a short time. But her name was Marjorie, and she ended
up... So would you see elk in the village at all?
There used to never be elk at the village.
Was there grass in front of the Altivar?
Yeah.
There was?
Oh, yeah, there was grass there. But once in a while you see a deer up there, but you never saw an elk inside the park.
Huh.
And I don't know how come all of a sudden they have so many elk there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one time they took deer to Kansas and Missouri and Oklahoma, I think. They transplanted herds.
Okay.
And where my sister lived, it was nothing to see an elk or a deer out in their front yard. There was a hay field across, and they'd go over there and enjoy their meal and cut through her yard and go up on the hillside. But that was a long time ago. It just doesn't seem possible that she's been gone that as many years as she has. She lived a long life. She was 92. And she said it was time for her to go. She was like my mother. My mother wasn't going, though. She was going to live 15 years, and she only lived 14.
She did pretty good. She wanted to go for 15. She went for 14. That's pretty good.
And she thought she was going home any day, and she was so happy that day that she passed away, because the nurse came in, and she fed her, and she had said her prayers, and she says, my son and my daughter are going to come and see me, and I'm going to take a little nap, so I'll be fresh when they come.
Nice.
And she went to sleep, and when my sister went in, she was gone.
Mm.
But what a way to go.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't. Right. She was suffering because she'd been hurt, but My mother didn't have a sense of pain. She had an injury to her spine in a car accident, and the doctor, she had ribs broken, and they were pressing against her lungs, and it was on her left side, and he was so worried about those ribs puncturing her lungs.
Sure.
And he didn't, they didn't take you to the hospital then, those days. They took her to my sister.
Wow.
It was just a few miles in to my sister's house, and she wasn't complaining of anything, and she didn't say her back hurt, and he just thought it was her ribs were broken. And so he took her in, and my sister put her to bed, and he said keep her quiet, and he taped her and everything, and she wasn't supposed to use her arms to do anything, to raise him up a lot or anything. And Dad brought her home at the end of the week. He took a bunch of pillows and put them all around her in the car and got her comfortable and brought her home. And it was a Sunday. And I said, Mom, I didn't get the clothes washed yesterday, but I'll do them when I come home from, it was a school day. And I said, I'll come home from school and do the washing. I came home, and who was hanging clothes out on the clothesline? My mother. Oh, she couldn't raise the one arm, and she was trying to get the clothespin over the end of the things that she was hanging up. I said, Mama, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be doing that. I was going to do that when I got home. Go in the house. Go lay down. Go away. So I finished up the washing, but she said, well, that's my job. She always did her job. When my parents met and decided to get married, they talked. And my dad said, I will always make the living. I want a family. He didn't come from a very happy home. And he said, I want a family. I want to enjoy a family. And he said, I don't want you to ever have to work. My mother never worked out after she worked for my great aunt. That was it. She worked hard. She grew a garden every year. She raised chickens and sold them. She did a lot of things, you know, but she sold eggs. She did. Sometimes she'd do sewing for people, but I don't think my mother ever really liked to sew. When I go home on vacation, there was always a stack of, would you put a hem in this? Would you sew this jacket up? It needs to have the lining changed or whatever. And I'd do it. But
well, you might have been better at it than she was.
She had a nice sewing machine. It was a treadle, and that's what I learned on. Well, in the meantime, I'd been introduced to electric sewing machine, and my dad thought that the thing that she wanted most was an electric sewing machine. She didn't want an electric sewing machine. He wanted an electric sewing machine. He sat down and sewed on the sewing machine. And he enjoyed doing it, but she wouldn't let him. That was not his job.
Mm-hmm.
It was like cleaning the house. It's my job. So when the dad retired, she'd start to do something, and he'd say, I just got finished running the sweeper. I did that while you were over at Pat's. I did the dishes. You don't have to do the dishes. So one day she sat him down and she said, you know, I have my things that I've always done, and you have a hobby, and you can go out and work in your woodshed. Go work in your woodshed and let me do my things in the house. So they came to an agreement, and that's what they did.
They worked it out.
And he made little figures for people's yards. He made ducks and birds and all kind of stuff. And he made birds. He painted them so you could see the feathers. And I came home, and they'd put a trellis up at the end of the porch, and it had four or five little birds on it. And I thought, gee, they never move. And I said something to Mom, and she said, oh, Dad made those. They were wood.
Oh, my gosh.
They looked so real. Huh. And I thought they were really birds sitting out there, because they were birds like the ones we had around the area.
Nice.
But he had made those. He made Myra a set of ducks. He made my sister geese for her yard. And he was always making things like that. He made these things you could sit on top of your mailbox. When we lived in Greeley, everybody had either mailbox or they had to go to the post office. Uh-huh. And he made these figures that when the wind blew, it had a little
propeller
fan, and uh-huh. it made a, like he had one, a man was doing a jig, and there was another one that the hand was going over. Pretty soon the other hand would be going mm-hmm. over. And he made things like that all the time. He loved doing that. But he couldn't make a living at that, of course. He was a blacksmith. And he liked being a blacksmith. He loved to shoe horses. Mm-hmm. In all his years, he'd never been kicked by a horse or
wow.
a mule. That's pretty good.
That's very good.
He made a, I don't know what you'd call it, it had slats going along the side of the horse, and they couldn't move very much. And he could pull their leg up and work on each mm-hmm. shoe. Mm-hmm. And he had his own, I'm saying a kiln, but it wasn't that. It's
a hearth?
A what?
A hearth? Where you forge?
It was
forge.
A forge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he had that, and he would fit. He could really fit the shoes for the horses. Some of the usually, if a blacksmith is real good, he can fit a horse or a mule real well. Mm-hmm. But some of them don't, and they're very uncomfortable, and they mm-hmm. they throw a shoe.
Yeah,
and he was able to keep going and do all those things.
Nice.
And he liked to do ornamental iron. And
did he ever come and visit you at the South Rim?
They never came. My father had heart trouble, and they told him he went back one time to see his mother, and he was quite young at that time, and he noticed that his heart wasn't beating the same back there, and he'd gone over some mountains and stuff, and so he never was enthused about going anyplace.
Okay.
When his mother died, he went back for her burial, but
mm-hmm.
that was before I was born, so I never knew my grandparents, any of them. Mm. My grandfather's died at the turn of the century, and my grandmother's in the 20s, so I never knew them.
Mm.
My mother's mother lived with my folks toward the end. Mm. She had a farm. When my grandfather died, she ran the farm, and the boys helped her. She had sons, and they helped her until they left home and got involved in their own mm-hmm. businesses mm-hmm. and stuff. Some of them were farmers, and one was a barber, and three of them were construction. They had construction companies. And so she didn't have boys at home anymore, so she and the girls took care of everything. And my mother used to ride in when they go to the mill and have flour ground.
Hmm.
She thought that was the most wonderful thing in the world, she said, when she was a little girl, to get to ride in the buggy. And my grandmother would, she was real little, and she couldn't reach the horses to get the bridle on them and stuff. So she'd get the horse over to this, they had a step up over a fence, and she'd get up on the top of that step and get the horse to come over close enough that she could put the bridle
wow.
on.
Huh.
And that's how she'd get the horses ready to go to town.
Nice.
But she could do it. She was a strong person. And anyhow, she was living with my uncle and aunt. My aunt was a very, I wouldn't say she was thrifty. She didn't believe that you needed sugar on cereal. She didn't believe you needed this on that. She wouldn't put salt in anything. Everything was flat at her house. And I hated to go to her house to eat because my mother's cooking was so much better. But anyhow, and she was, I don't know, she was always snotty. She didn't like girls, I don't think.
Mm.
She was always real snotty. She had a daughter, and her daughter was just like her mother. If I touched her doll, Mama, Mary's touching my doll.
Uh-huh.
So she'd say, go up and play with Julia. Her name was Julia. She had Olivia and Julia. Anyway, I'd go upstairs, but I'd sit on the step, just sit there. Because every time I touched anything, she'd yell.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't worth going in.
Right.
And having, you let her things alone.
Mm.
Why did I even go up the steps?
Right.
You know, there wasn't any reason. I'd rather have gone out in the yard and chased the chickens around or something.
So, Mary, you mentioned that your mother grew up on a farm. She could hook up a team very early.
My grandmother.
This was your grandmother or this was your mother?
My grandmother. My mother would go into town with her when she was a little girl.
Okay. So I'm assuming that you don't, if all the parts were there with the horse and the wagon and the bridles and all the stuff, would you be able to tell me how to do that, how to hook things together to make it work?
She put the bridle on them first.
No, could you do that?
No,
could,
I couldn't do
okay.
that.
Okay, I'm just trying to think about generational contact.
I used to ride once in a great while.
Okay.
And the last time I rode, a horse took off through the woods. It was at Grand Canyon. The garbage truck went by and something fell off and the horse spooked.
Spooked.
And little Jake Smithers was the guide, and he had to chase me down.
Oh.
I couldn't get the horse to stop.
Yeah.
It went up on his hind legs. The one year I didn't go off on the ground.
Yeah.
But that was the last time I really rode a horse.
Okay.
My sister had a horse, and I have a sister-in-law who had never lived on a farm, but I have a picture of her sitting on that stupid horse. And I rode that horse around the yard a couple times just to get her to consent to get on it, that it wouldn't buck you off. It was an old horse. When it was a young one, my niece Dottie used to ride it all over the countryside, and she'd jump fences and everything else. But she got her wrists broken one time jumping.
Oops.
The horse got tired of jumping, and it just went up to the fence and ducked its head, and she went right over. And she broke both of her arms.
Oh.
But she wasn't very old. I think she was probably a teenager, but she wasn't very old.
Mm.
But I never lived on a farm, but we had a farm. My brothers lived there, and my sister and my brother-in-law lived there at one time.
Mm.
But my dad really kept that farm up, and the boys. We had a hedgerow on one side, and they had fencing on one side, and they had a creek on one side.
Mm.
And on the front, they had a rock wall because they cleared the field, and so they made a rock wall.
Great.
And the house was made out of rock.
Wow.
The window seats in the house were about 18 inches.
This was in Kansas?
In Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
It was out in the country from our hometown.
Is that building still standing?
I imagine the house is, although the last time I went by it, a city couple bought it.
Hmm.
My dad had grown a beautiful orchard. He had all kind of fruit out there, and he took such good care of it. And these people bought it. Well, the first year they had a late cold spell, and the trees were all in bloom, and of course they didn't produce anything that year.
Right.
So he thought they weren't any good, so he cut them all down. After all the years my dad spent on that. And my dad had made this chicken house, and they called it a brooder house, but it was, I always call it the chicken house.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, it was out from the at the edge of the house yard, and my mother had quite a walk to go out to it. Well, this lady was crippled, and my dad really built a good building. He could take where the chickens roost, he had boards that he could take out from under them and wash them off. He'd take them down to the river and put them in the river and let them wash
them
off.
Sure.
And he just had it fixed really nice. And in the summertime, they didn't get out, and the foxes and stuff couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
But he did have, he could open it for them so that it weren't so hot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he just had it fixed really nice. They brought it right up to the kitchen door because this lady couldn't walk out that far to get the eggs.
Oh, my gosh.
And we went by there, and this beautiful old rock house had a couple rooms built on the back of it. I don't know how they got through all that rock to build, and they probably took a window out and just cut down from there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they had built a couple rooms on the back of it, and they spray-painted it all white.
Wow. What color was the rock before then?
It was natural rock.
Okay.
It had browns and veins in it and stuff. And it was a rocky area, and they had used what they had there to build it. And they really had built a good house.
Mm.
I don't know who built it. My folks bought it. They bought 80 acres for $500. The 30s came along and they sold 80 acres for $500.
Wow, yeah. Oops.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. But things were really different then. And my dad loved that farm. Every time he could take a little time off, he'd go out there. And sometimes he'd even close the shop, which was very unusual. But if it was time to pick or anything, he'd go out and make sure the boys picked the fruit right and put it in bushel baskets right and did it all right. Sometimes my mother would go out and stay with him, and he'd go back and pick her up the next week. But my mother was very good at canning. We had a cellar full of canned goods when we went to Kansas City, and it was a good thing because we ate out of those cans for a whole year, and we brought some home, to Greeley.
Did you have any dairy cattle?
We had a dairy cow that we put out in pasture, Moody's pasture. It was probably a half quarter, three quarters of a mile from our house. We did have a barn at one time, and they kept the cow in there, and then Dad started using it for a garage, and they got rid of the cow. You could buy milk for 7 cents a quart, and my cousins had a dairy. It was only a little over a block away, less than two blocks anyway. And my mother would boil out the milk bottle, give me 7 cents. I'd run down to Jay and Pete's, and I'd put the 7 cents in and shake it all the way down there. People would have a fit if you did that now.
Yeah, yeah.
He was separating, usually it was Pete. No, it was Jay. Jay was separating the milk, and he separated it right into the bottle and put the cap on it and say, okay, and I'd give him my 7 cents out of the bottle before he put the milk in. But that was funny because people now wouldn't do that at all. And when we moved to Kansas City, we found that there was a place right outside of the city limits. At that time, the city limits was, I think, 27th Street for Kansas City, Kansas. And that place was called Welburn. My brother lives in that area right now. Well, he's lived there for years. But they had this place out there, and you could take your gallon jar and get a gallon of milk.
Wow.
And it was like, it's probably less than 50 cents.
Yeah.
And but you had to bring your own jar.
Okay.
And they would put it in the jar for you. And you'd pay them and you'd have your milk.
It was the town dairy.
Yeah, that was the town dairy. I don't know where their cows were. They weren't there. But there were fields around that had cattle, but that might belong to some of them.
And they may have brought in the surrounding farms milk.
Yeah. And they had, they made like cottage cheese and stuff like that. You could buy other things than milk there, but anyhow, my dad liked whole milk. He liked fresh milk. He didn't like that pasteurized milk you got in the city. That was junk.
Interesting.
So we'd go out and we'd get that milk. And then I left Kansas City. We left Kansas City. When we went back, the city limits had gone out further, and that place wasn't there anymore. I don't know if they moved or they just closed, probably. Or maybe they just sold to places that made cheese and stuff.
It was very common. As the towns grew, they would outgrow the outline.
My sister had two separate places that they sold milk to. They sold Guernsey milk to one place, and they sold Jersey milk to another place because you got more money for Jersey. But they had Guernsey cattle too, so they would milk them, and sometimes they milked 100 head of cattle. The boys would help my brother-in-law, and I said to my sis one day, don't you ever milk the cows? She said, no, I will never milk a cow. I said, why? She said, my husband would have me out there every morning at 5 o'clock milking cows, and I have enough to do to get the milk cans ready. She wouldn't go out and milk. And she told her daughters never to learn to milk. And my mother and dad told me that I had to learn to milk. So my brothers took me out to the cow. And she'd been out in the pasture, and she had burrs in her tail.
Oh, and oh no.
They showed me how to do it, and I started to milk the cow, and she swished me, and I thought I had lost my eyesight. Those burrs just scratched me all the way across.
Wow.
And I ran screaming to my mother, and she put some soap and water and washed my face good, and there were some little scratches, and she put some Vaseline or something on it. She used Vaseline for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, she put some Vaseline and stuff on it, and I survived, and I didn't lose my eyesight. And I never did milk again either.
I was going to say, did they send you back to get milk
enough.
Or not? That was enough.
But, you know, my mother grew up on a farm, and she could milk faster than my brother-in-law who grew up in a farm.
Wow.
Even when she had her hands were so crippled up in later life, she could still milk those cows faster than he could.
Wow.
But then they got electric milkers because my nephew was in an accident, and he couldn't, he was hurt real bad. And he couldn't milk, so my brother-in-law finally got some electric milkers.
What happened to him?
He was a basketball player, and he got a scholarship to some college. And at one time, I have a picture of him from the Kansas City Star, that he was the best in that class of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming home from school at Christmas time, and Kansas used to not have a speed limit. You could go as fast as you could control your car. Well, he was coming down this old dirt road, and this water truck pulled out of a farmhouse, and he came all the way across to turn onto the road, because country roads aren't very wide, and you really have to know how to handle a big truck. And this man came out, and he didn't stop. He came out of the farm without stopping. And my nephew was going too fast, and he was too close. He couldn't get the brakes on in time to stop. And he went completely under that water truck, and his car was smashed down on top of him so bad.
Mm-hmm.
His face, the steering wheel hit him in the face. And
did the milk truck not see him coming?
He didn't probably look. He was probably thinking about turning the corner there, you know. And you think of Kansas as being kind of flat.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. Eastern Kansas, up and down.
Okay.
And up. And they're not big hills. But when you come over a hill, you never know what's going to be in front of you, and it might be a car going on the wrong side of the road or anything.
Sure.
And that was the kind of road he was on.
Hmm.
It was just an old country road.
Hmm.
Anyhow, he went completely under it, and he was really badly hurt.
Hmm.
And they didn't know if he'd ever see. I saw him, that was before Christmas, and I went home in February, and he couldn't focus his eyes yet then.
Hmm.
And he couldn't go back to school, and he lost his scholarship.
Hmm.
He hurt his legs, and he was really bad. He didn't break legs, but he hurt them. I don't know what he did to them. And I only saw him that one time when he was sick, and he was sitting up. But I didn't stay there very long, and I only spent a little time with him. But anyway, he's always had health problems.
Hmm.
But he learned to do cement, which is a hard job. He's had cancer twice. The first time he went in and he had treatments, he got out of the hospital, and 2 months later, he had cancer again.
Mm.
He went to the hospital, and they said, we'll operate on you. And he said, no, you're not. If I'm going to live, I'm going to live. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die.
Okay.
He said, I'm not going through that again.
Mm-hmm.
So he went home. He's still alive.
Mm.
And this has been, 12 years or so now?
Good for him.
And he farmed until he and his wife split up a few years ago, and they sold the farm, excepting that she took one where the house was. She took that acreage as part of her settlement.
Hmm.
And I don't know if she lived out there or not. I don't know what she did. I only met her one time, and I really didn't like her.
Hmm.
But anyway, she said, what do you do? And I said, I work in housekeeping. what do you do in housekeeping? I make sure the beds are made and the places are clean. I'm the housekeeper. She said, oh, well, I have an office job. And I said, oh, that's nice. I don't care what she did.
Yeah.
It didn't make me any difference. And she sat there and she didn't say anything else to me. And finally, Jerry came in. He'd been out in the yard. He came in and he said, it's time to go home. And so she got up and left. And Dot says, I feel the same way, Mary. My sis, she didn't like her either. Mm. But she thought she was better. And I always say, you might be as good as I am, but you're no better than I am, and I'm no better than you are.
That's right.
And I've always said that, and I believe that. I think God put us on this earth. Maybe we don't have equal intelligence. Maybe we don't have equal height. We don't have whatever. But we were all put here equal. And it's up to us if we want to get ahead. But we should never put yourself above anybody else.
That's right.
And I've always thought that way. I fought for Indian kids and Bufenmeyer used to fight for the Indian kids. And we used to fight for the Mexican kids that worked for us. When I first went to work at the laundry, we had a lot of Mexican kids. And I remember one time, there was a fair over at Flagstaff, and these kids all got a ride down there. Well, nobody came to work the next morning. So Beef goes down and gets a bus, and he goes down and he finds as many of them as he could, and he brought them to work. And they were never very happy after that, and they started leaving. And so he went on. They said, you can't hire Indians of different tribes. That's a lot of malarkey.
I see.
They might have different beliefs and everything, but we had the Cherokees, we had Apaches, we had Navajos, we had Hopis, we had a Seminole Indian.
All at the same time?
At the same time.
Really?
And I only ever had trouble with the help getting in an argument or a fight one time. We had five girls. One of them stood on the side and she was egging these others on. This one that said this about you, and this one said this about you, and she got them all fighting. And they were really going at it. And Ransby came and said, Mary, they're fighting out there. These boys thought it was hilarious. So anyhow, I go out, and they all had long hair. And I got a hold of this one and pulled, you stand there. You stand there. You stand there. You stand there. And you, I want to see in the office. And I took that one in. Oh, I didn't do anything. So I said, okay, go out and go to work. And I took each one of them in the office at a time. Beef was off on a Legion thing, and he wasn't there. And so it was up to me. And so I took each one in the office, and I said, okay, what were you fighting over? Well, she said that so-and-so said this about me. And I said, do you listen to what everybody says about you? I say, if they're talking about me, they're not talking about somebody else. I said, ignore it. Don't listen to that crap. Anyhow, I took each one of them in, and I talked to them, and I said, you four girls go back to work. And I called the first one back in, and I said, you're fired. She said, oh, I can't go home. I don't have any way to get home. I said, call the nearest trading post to your folks, and you have them go out and give them a message, and they'll come in and get you. But you are going home today.
Hmm.
So go get your things ready, so when they come in, you will be ready to go home. And they had her check ready, and her folks came in and got her. And I never had another squabble like that. I had some white ladies that would tease one another. My friend Petey loved to tease this one other woman that she worked with. And she just do it out of ornery-ness, you know. And this lady said she was going to go kill herself one night. Well, Petey came and she said, you know, I teased her and she left and I don't know where she went, and it's getting 10, 11 o'clock at night. She said, should we go out and look on the rim? And I said, Petey, I'll go down, I'll walk down to the Bright Angel, I'll walk the rim, and when I come back, I'll let you know and we'll get a ranger. Well, I went out the back door. I had a key to the back door at the girls' dorm at that time. Now they leave it open, but anyway, at that time, you had to have a key to get in and out of it. And Mrs. Cunningham, for some reason, gave me a key. I don't know why. It was closest to my room, though, to come from the laundry and come in that door. And anyway, she had given me a key, so I went out the back door, and here was this lady huddled up in the corner on the back porch, crying her eyes out.
Oh.
And I said, you know, she's just teasing you. And I said, I've talked to her, and she won't tease you anymore. And I said, you just go in and go to bed and get up in the morning and come to work, and you'll be fine. And so she went in and went to bed. And I said, Petey, I don't want you ever to tease that woman again. Say hello to her. Say it's a nice day. Do whatever you want that way. But don't tease her. So she quit teasing her.
Mm.
But Petey was a sweet person, but she could be on me sometimes. One time I was temporarily in her room for a while because they were painting my room. And she said, Mary, I swept the floor, but you don't have a dustpan, and I don't have a dustpan. So she said, I just swept it under your bed. And she did. I pulled my bed out, and sure enough, she swept it under the bed. But, oh, dear. But I loved that lady, and she was a fine person. But she raised a family on her own, and she had a daughter who had lots of children, and she died, and her husband was always in trouble. And Petey went down to where they lived, and she knew all the farmers and the ranchers around there, and she got a placement for each one of the 12 grandchildren.
Wow.
And that was something to do. And she came to us with nothing, and she eventually, she saved every penny she could, and she built a little house in her hometown. And the people down there liked her, and the construction guys were building a lot, and they told her to have her son put in the boards to make the walls and everything, and they'd pour cement for her foundation, and
wow,
they did it. And she had saved enough money to get the wood and everything, and her one son did the roofing, and she had her home.
Nice.
And I got to go down and see her one time. Well, I took her home when
she
quit.
Where was this? Where was the home?
She was in, it's on the, oh, where is that? It's a little town, Sholo. Sholo. She lived in Sholo. And she had her little house down there, and I went down to see her. And, well, I took her down there when she went home. And then she was going to come up and see me. And she got all ready to come. And she had written me a note and said she was coming. And I was all ready to go down and meet her and everything. And they called me and told me that she had her suitcase by the door. And she was lying on the bed and she was dead. She had a stroke. But she was really a good person in lots of ways. And she had a lot of talent. She could play the organ like you wouldn't believe. She could play the piano, but she never did it in public. She'd go over to Buffenmeyer's. They had an organ, and she'd play it. But they didn't know how to play it, but she could really play it.
Wow.
And she was just a really exceptional person. She came, like I said, with nothing. And she enjoyed her life at the canyon. But on Mother's Day one year, her son and his family were supposed to come up for Mother's Day, and they didn't call her or anything. And it came noon, it came 1 o'clock, and they hadn't come. And she called, and she called one of the others, and they said, oh, they went to such and such place today. And she was crying, because she thought that they were going to come and she was going to see the family. And so I had this friend that was a helicopter pilot, and he was out there at the heliport. And I called up, and he was always saying, come on out and I'll give you a ride, you know. And I'm not a very good flyer, but anyway, I said, Petey, I got a surprise for you. And we got out there, and she said, I've never been up in a airplane. I said, well, today you're going to go up in a helicopter. And she said, oh, my goodness. And she was so thrilled, and she enjoyed that. So I was sick the whole time. I used to get sick on a swing even. But anyway, she just enjoyed that so much.
Nice.
And she said that that was the best Mother's Day she ever had. Mm. Because I took her out to dinner after we got off the plane. She ate. I looked at her eating. I was still queasy. Mm. And I said to the guy, I said, how much do I owe you? And he said, I always told you I'd take you for a ride. It didn't make any difference. There was two or one in the plane.
Oh, that's nice.
So he took me for a ride. He had the authority to do it and everything.
Do you remember his name, who that was?
You know, I don't. I think his first name was Jake, but I'm not sure. Mm. I know there was a Jake out there, and it seemed like it was him that took us.
But this was when they were taking the helicopters right out of downtown Tucson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could go over the you could still go over the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really a thrill. But it wasn't to me. It was to her.
Yeah, it can be kind of sickening. Yeah. On. Well, why don't we call it a day today?
Okay.
And, you've got
this is a rambling day.
Yeah, this is a rambling day. And this is good. This is fun. And we'll reconvene.
I'll try to have that book.
Next week I won't be here.
Okay.
But the week after I will. So
I kind of think that Becky is making out the newsletter, and she might have taken it home.
Okay.
Because I asked her husband the other day, and he says, well, it's time for us to make one out, but we haven't started it yet.
Okay.
So I imagine they've done that.
Okay. Do you want to give me a call? I'll call you next week and sort of see how things are going.
Okay.
On that. Should we do that?
Yeah, that's all right. Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. Cool. Well, thank you again.
We don't have to do long-distance calls anymore.
That's right. Everything's all...
That really makes
Williams
it nice.
Is nice and close. Yeah. Same exchange. I have to call long-distance to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
But not to Williams from Flagstaff, so yeah. That's handy.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Those things. Cool. Well, thank you again.